Ever feel like you're too busy to eat healthy? Meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution. No more meal planning or shopping. Every Sunbasket meal is designed by dietitians and chefs to be healthy, nourishing, and delicious with none of the hassle. You can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy recipes each week, and you can order things like Mediterranean diet, vegetarian, carb conscious, even gluten-free. I love to cook, but some nights having those decisions made for you and so nutritiously with organic fresh produce is fabulous. You can also have pre-made meal options as well that are just as tasty and are ready in 5 minutes or less. Sunbasket takes care of all the hard parts of healthy eating and delivers right to your door. Remember, mental health is directly tied to what you eat or don't eat, and Sunbasket's offer is phenomenal. Go to sunbasket.com/selfwork today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/selfwork to save $120 across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. This is Selfwork, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Selfwork, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. Mental illnesses have names: depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. But let's talk for a second about what exactly good mental health is and how do you create it. As usual, I did my homework and found a really great article as they outlined 7 characteristics of good mental health, 7 ways you actually build it. Welcome to this week's edition of Selfwork. If you watched the Olympics, you saw Simone Biles not only succeed wildly, but demonstrate to all the world how important maintaining her mental health has been to her. She talked openly about regular therapy sessions and the meditation practice that you could see her doing between competitions. Today, we're going to talk about the concept of mental health versus mental illness. It's a crucial distinction and one that I think a lot of people kind of get mixed up. As Simone said of her departure from the Tokyo Olympics 4 years ago, first, she tried to explain the danger of the twisties, as they're called, where a gymnast can lose the sense of where their body is in relation to the floor. But then she says, "Nor do I have to explain why I put my health first. Physical health is mental health." The voicemail message for today is from someone whose mother wants to treat her still as if she were a child and tries to maintain control over her now grown daughter. I'll have some ideas, although I'm happy to report that she also told me that she's read some of my work and that has offered her an explanation of why she's feeling the way she does. That makes me feel good. Today I'm going to listen in to BetterHelp's message. You know, it's really kind of funny to me. You know someone's more becoming an adult when they start saying, yes, the beginning of the year is January. Because when you're a student, the beginning of the year is September. So for any of you beginning the year here in the next few weeks, maybe it's the time for you to reach out for BetterHelp. BetterHelp has long been a sponsor of Selfwork and a great one. And of the several online therapies out there, they by far have the most highly rated. In fact, I looked it up to make sure. And Forbes has BetterHelp rated more highly over both Talkspace and online therapy, the other major online providers. Now, you might be asking yourself, so why would any good clinician want to work for an online service? Let me tell you, those clinicians don't have to take care of all the business details, the paperwork, the insurance filing, the scheduling service, none of it. I myself have been approached by BetterHelp several times to join their network. And when I saw the benefits, frankly, if I hadn't already had too much on my plate, I would have joined. You can communicate through text, chat, video, or phone, whatever is most convenient and works for you. And the number one problem that so many people face when considering therapy, that problem is taken care of for you. What is it? How do I find someone? The BetterHelp website asks you questions, you answer them, and then they find a therapist that fits best for you in your area. If you have one session and don't get much out of it, All you have to do is let them know and the process starts over again. It's private, professional, convenient, and affordable. These are licensed professionals, someone who's put years into their training so that they can best help you. And so much of the hassle is taken care of for you. They now have 35,000 clinicians in their network, up from 25,000. So now is your time to choose BetterHelp. And if you use this link, betterhelp.com/selfwork, you'll get 10% off your first month of sessions. It's betterhelp.com/selfwork. I promise you, good therapy helps. I know. I've been there. It helped me, and it can help you. Many of you have heard on self-work, as I've talked about my own mental health journey, that I quite suddenly developed performance anxiety in my late 20s, literally out of the blue, or seemingly so. Something I'd done a million times caused me to have a huge panic attack. I was singing a solo, standing by other members of my hometown church choir, and suddenly I started shaking, horribly sweating, my voice quivering as I tried to control what was happening. A couple of choir folks even reached out to me, trying to steady me. It was so very obvious. But I was in the back balcony of the church, so I wasn't visible to the entire congregation. Yet I was humiliated, confused. I blamed it on lack of practice, being up too late the night before. Anything but the much scarier to me at the time thing of losing my ease of performing. That didn't occur until what they call the yips in golf or other sports began creeping into the rest of my world. Now remember, I was a professional singer at that point in my life, singing regularly in studios with other jingle singers, often being asked to try a solo. Certainly, there was a lot of musical stress there, the requirements being that you had to read music very quickly, sing, of course, in tune, and basically, rarely, if ever, screw up. I ended leaving the profession. Was that due to this new anxiety? I didn't want to think so, but that was probably denial. I didn't really want to admit something was wrong. The point I want to make in this episode is this. A mental illness like panic disorder or depression or bipolar disorder is different than poor mental health. You can actually be mentally healthy and have a mental illness. So I had lots of empathy for Simone Biles 4 years ago when she left the Olympics due to the twisties taking over and causing her to very rationally fear for her safety. The Cleveland Clinic explains the twisties as a problem of proprioception. Your mind isn't giving you the sensory or mental cues of where your body is in relationship to the floor. There are things you can do for the twisties, like all performance anxiety issues, but it also takes looking into not only the physical, but the mental part of the proprioception problem. It also takes someone looking into their emotional life, their general mental health, how they're handling decisions, how they're connected with others, how they're generally coping, how they're treating themselves physically, how emotionally mature are they, what traumas might they have experienced in life that may be affecting them now. All of that could be, and probably is, very important to work on. The yips, or the twisties, are called a mental block. Yet anxiety and perfectionism can be a part of their presence. Simone Biles had the mental health to make a decision that the twisties were going to endanger her and perhaps negatively affect her team. So she left the competition, and she was derided for it by many. What jumped into the headlines made Biles sound as if she were sick, when in reality she made a great decision, one that was a rationally good decision. So let's get back to this distinction between mental illness and mental health. If someone came up to you and asked, "How's your mental health?" or "What do you do to keep your mental health healthy?" we might get some confused looks. I get enough sleep, I exercise. But isn't that more about physical health, keeping your weight down, your blood pressure steady? What if you answer instead, "Well, I try to be aware of my purpose or my values when I'm making decisions, so I make choices that don't come back to bite me in the ass or that I regret." Now, that seems to be more in the realm of mental health, doesn't it? We know what mental illness is. It's disordered behavior. There are distortions in your thinking or your emotional regulation that can disrupt your life. Mental illnesses have names: depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. But let's talk for a second about what exactly good mental health is and how do you create it. As usual, I did my homework and found a really great article from the UK website mind.org as they outline 7 characteristics of good mental health, 7 ways you actually build it. And then they talk about the feelings or experiences associated with good mental health, meaning when you have it, how do you feel? Let's start first with how you build it. The 7 components that they describe are support systems, community, physical health, environmental health, intellectual health, boundaries, and self-care. Let's take one at a time. Support systems. When you have a good support system, you have people around you who are there for you when you need them. This could be your spouse, your siblings, your parents, your friends, people who know you, who you've let in. Now, for some of you listening, that in and of itself may be very hard to let people in or to even admit that you need support. But it's the first component listed, and it's very important. If you don't have a support system, then it might be that you do indeed struggle with admitting problems or that you're not in total control of things in your life, that you're human like the rest of us. The cool thing about a support system is that not only do people give to you, but when they're struggling, you give to them. One thing that I've said to many people when they say, well, I just don't want to burden other people with my problems, I'll say, you know, have you ever thought that maybe you're robbing your friend or your sibling or whomever to be a friend to you, to listen, to give to you, to support you? That in some ways you're taking away an experience from them that will help them feel stronger in y'all's relationship. It's another way to think about developing a support system. The second component is community. You can find this in a church, in a school, in a club, in a class or organization. They're people with whom you feel you fit. You have a place. Your presence is noted and matters. And again, if you don't have a sense of community, your own problems with self-esteem may be getting in your way. I can see there's a conundrum here. In order to have good mental health, you need to build a community. But your struggles with esteem could prevent you from even risking doing just that. I'm going to put in a link here to one of my own episodes on how to build that self-esteem. I offer 3 exercises for you to try. So once again, it's what you can do about it. You'll find the link in the show notes. Okay, so the third component is physical health. Now, not all of us are blessed with great physical health. Some of us have chronic illness like diabetes or celiac disease. Some of us develop illnesses like heart problems or cancer. But what I want to stress here about physical health is to look for what you have control over. You may already know the benefits of sleep, exercise, and good nutrition. That's preached to us everywhere. But what do you actually do in your life? Do you drive around the parking lot of the grocery store until you find the absolutely closest space to the door? Or do you choose one that's back a bit and walk 30 steps more? Do you scroll through social media before you go to sleep or try to go to sleep? When my mom talked about menopause, she called it the change, and it was all very hush-hush, as if there was something wrong about something so natural. Thank goodness with mental health awareness and actual research, we're beginning to understand the huge role hormones play in women's bodies. Being postmenopausal has its challenges, but if you're going through either perimenopause or menopause, then I suggest you try Hormone Harmony. Why? Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now here's the beauty about them. They help the body adapt to stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. Or do you do some journaling and talk with your partner, take a warm bath, anything other than having that light of that phone shining in your face? Physical health means paying attention to those small choices every day, and then those better choices add up. So let's take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. Okay, let's talk about environmental health. Whether you live in the city or on a farm, taking note of how your environment affects you can be so important. Now, if you live in a dangerous place, then obviously your environment holds threat. If you live in an unfriendly place where people don't look at you in the eye or offer to help, then that's really hard. You can counter that with finding your community and support system, which we've already talked about, and that will help. And certainly, you may or may not be able to change where you live, but you can look for ways to tolerate or change that environment's impact on you. There are many studies showing the positive effect of being in nature, whether it's a park, your backyard, a local pond or stream. We humans are calmed by that. Now, what's intellectual health? People sometimes ask me how I stay energetic enough to do this podcast or write a book. And my answer is usually the same. Because I'm curious. I stay curious, really, about everything. Learning new things, whatever that thing is, having a mental challenge, that's what can create intellectual health. Play a game you've never played. Cook something you've never cooked. Go to the bookstore and pick up a magazine that you've never read. Whatever you find out will intellectually help you. And who knows how many new neural pathways you're creating as you do it. Okay, let's get to boundaries. What exactly are those and why in the world is that part of good mental health? Because when you establish them, when you know and then act on them, your relationships are going to stay much healthier. But what do I mean more specifically? Let's say you're at a party and someone that you know pretty well tells a joke that offends you. Now, you could stand there and laugh all the while seething on the inside. You could throw your drink at them and call them out. Neither one of those solutions reflects a good boundary. Rather, the first example is about avoidance of conflict, and the second is allowing your anger to justify some sort of dramatic reaction. What you could do instead is to call that person to the side and tell them that that joke offended you. And if they want to be with you, then you're going to ask them not to tell that kind of joke around you. Now, that won't always turn out well. I get that. But you're setting a boundary, and that's important to you. You're not avoiding the conflict. You're setting the boundary. Here's another example. Say someone is calling you all the time and taking up a huge part of your day. You could stay on the phone for hours, or you could totally avoid their call. But you like this person. They're simply too needy. What you could say, and the boundary you could set is, quote, "I'm getting to where I no longer know what to say to you. I'm feeling overwhelmed by all that you tell me." Or, "I enjoy this relationship, but I simply can't spend this much time on the phone." You're asserting yourself. You're drawing a line. You're stating what's important to you and how much or little you're willing to tolerate. Boundaries are very important. The last component, self-care, is multifaceted. You could say that all of the ideas already mentioned are part of self-care. And in fact, they definitely are. But what I want to stress here is what's called emotional regulation. If you get overly angry, or you never allow yourself to be angry, that's a problem with emotional regulation. If you stay sad or never say you're sad, that's not emotional regulation. If you stay mostly in your head and don't allow emotions to surface, that is not emotional regulation. And if you're almost totally governed by how you're feeling in a certain moment by your emotions, that's very far from regulating your emotions. You have to have them to regulate them. You have to express them to regulate them. You have to connect with them for you to regulate them. I don't know if you've ever seen a feelings wheel, but think of a big circle with a small circle in the middle. And that small circle is divided into six different pie shapes. Now, those pie shapes represent the six basic emotions, which are sadness, happiness, fear, anger, surprise, and disgust. Let me say that again. Sadness, happiness, fear, anger, surprise, and disgust. The theory is that all other emotions branch out from these six, like joy would be an offshoot of happiness, hopelessness an offshoot of sadness, or maybe fear. What I'd like for you to consider is this, even with simply the basic six emotions. How well do you express them or cope with them? Some people despise being surprised. They even get angry when surprised. But wonder might be an offshoot of surprise. Do they also hate wonder? It's interesting and part of being self-aware to be able to say, this is how I handle feeling X. This is how I handle feeling happy. This is how I handle feeling surprised or sad. When you can see yourself coping with any of those feelings, that is what emotional regulation is. Now, what does this have to do with self-care? Because what you do about those feelings when you're having them can either lead to chaos or relative calm. And that has a lot to do with self-care. So try your hand at the feelings wheel. Think about, how do I respond to sadness, happiness, fear, anger, surprise, or disgust? Well, we actually don't have a lot of time for me to talk about the feelings associated with good mental health. Let me tell you what they were, according again to the UK folks. They are gratefulness, excitement, letting go, appreciation, resilience, and being supportive. That's kind of interesting. Again, if you're interested in the article, I'll have it in the show notes. And it sort of sounds like that conversation will take an episode unto itself. But what I want you to take away, you could have a mental illness and have good mental health, just like Simone Biles. Some of the components may be harder than others to create. But good mental health, good self-care, I hope that's a priority for you. Maybe that's why I always say, take very good care.
SpeakPipe message from DrMargaretRutherford.com.
Let's listen to this SpeakPipe message.
I thank you for making this plug for me to understand the real reason why I feel the way that I feel. You know, I feel like that I've been controlled by my mother and father ever since I was maybe 10, 15 years old, you know, and it haven't stopped yet, you know, but I'm looking to seek the answers that I'm looking for to help me to address these feelings that I am feeling. And I feel like I'm suffering with a lot, you know, depression, and, you know, my family doesn't come around me because I see a lot. You know, and I understand a lot. And growing up in a house of five, four brothers, and I'm the only girl, you know, I got treated different because I had a child. You know, and now she's feel like I should tell her this and tell her that. She don't even want to be bothered with her own grandkids, you know, and it seemed like everything is falling apart, you know, and I'm just trying to seek answers and to understand why she feels like I have to tell her everything. I want to live my life in a way that I want to live my life. And she want to be the one to continue to control everything. And I'm grown, you know, and I want to raise my family different than how she raised us, you know. But she feels like she don't want to, you know, have a part of me unless I'm breaking myself down to her or giving her what she's looking for. And I feel trapped that way. I do. I feel like I'm proud. I feel like there's no answers for me out here. But running across this book and running across this blog and reading and to understand what's been happening to me give me more ideas about why my mom treats me and treat me this way and my father. Thank you.
Exerting control over someone, especially a grown child, is actually pretty common, or at least trying to do so. It, of course, can be downright abusive, especially when that adult was a child. But often it takes the form of what this listener is talking about, giving the adult child the message that they need you or that the parent expects to know a lot, often too much, about what's going on in your life. This listener seems to be waking up to her feeling of what's called infantilization, which is a fancy word, meaning you're treated like a much younger version of yourself. That's infantilization, like infant and then ization on the end of it. Infantilization. Some cultures promote this. They promote that family members share information liberally about what others may keep private. Not private as in secret, but private meaning I'm in control of what is known about me and what isn't available information. So if you live in that kind of culture or were reared in that kind of culture, this kind of sharing may be pretty normal. in that culture. So we don't want to pathologize that. You've also heard me call this dynamic enmeshment. That's when a parent gives a child, even a young child, the message that their job is to be heavily involved with that parent. The parent needs them emotionally. And it's a job that's never really successful or over because no one can make anyone else be happy. What I would offer this listener is this. Recognize your parent isn't going to give you permission to become your own person. They won't magically say, you know, you're a grown woman and I need to back off. That's a highly unlikely conversation. It could happen, but probably not. So remember when we were talking about boundaries? This listener is going to have to set some, and likely they won't be well received. She could give her mom a heads up. You know, Mom, I think I need to back off for a bit. I know you mean well, but my life is my own and it's too wrapped up in yours. As I said, that might not go well. And you actually may be surprised by this, but she may feel a little guilty, like she's taking something away from her mother, but she's not. She's establishing herself as an adult and living her own life. I'm so glad that my work on enmeshment has given her some info that's already been helpful. And let me know how I can help you. Please email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com or leave me a SpeakPipe message. I love listening to your message in your own voices. You can do that on my website at drmargaretrutherford.com or the app is also in your show notes. A lot of wonderful things are happening as far as people reaching out to me to speak to their organizations, a doctor in Kansas, an engineer here in Arkansas. I'm headed out to Florida to speak to a women's group. So if you have an organization where you think they need to hear about depression and perfectionism or destructive perfectionism or anything else I can talk about, please email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. I also signed the contract for the second book. It's going to be very different than the first book on perfectly hidden depression. We're going to dive deep into the 10 traits, and it will actually be a workbook, so you'll be able to do your work in the book as you read. I'm quite excited about it. I'll let you know more when it's ready. You can join my Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/selfwork. And please, I always forget to ask you this, please subscribe wherever you listen to Selfwork. It really lets people know that you are committed to this show and you think it's great, or at least helpful. As always, my gratitude to you for being here. I may not express enough how much that means to me. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Selfwork.